Well, it is time for our monthly home improvement show. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on WPR. And we have a couple of guests back to give us another go of answering all of your remodeling questions. Chad Spate back with us. Chad is the owner of Chad's Design Build. Chad, good to see you.
Larry, thanks for having me.
And Tony Trapp with us as well. Tony is, of course, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling of Madison. Tony, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me as well.
So as we talk with Chad and Tony, I hope you'll join in. Do you need some advice on a remodeling project? What home improvement questions do you have? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And, you know, I'm just going to start out because you wouldn't bring it up yourself. You're both national award winners. And I did want to bring that up. Tony, you won an award from the National Association of Home Remodelers.
Yep, for a universal design kitchen.
For a universal design kitchen. And Chad?
We had the best exterior renovation in the $100,000 to $200,000 category.
Oh, and so, and probably, and I think the only two local folks to win national awards. So
that's correct. We're very honored. Thank you.
Yeah. Congrats to both of you. And let's talk remodeling. Chad, what's the first thing you think about, you should think about when you're considering remodeling?
Well, I think good planning, you know, finding someone to probably help you figure out what needs to happen, how you're going to turn your dreams into a reality. You know, typically with a professional remodeling company, they are going to be able to provide those services of carefully assessing your home, to see, you know, what are the obstacles and what are the opportunities to realizing the dream. And perhaps that company will have design services to be able to render what you're thinking you want. And, of course, figuring out what it's really going to cost so that you can make informed decisions. That's more than one thing, but, I mean, it all kind of falls under planning.
Yeah, that makes sense. What's the biggest mistake maybe you can make when starting a remodeling project?
Starting without a plan. I mean, sometimes we have frantic folks calling and they've started and then they get stuck. And let's say you took out your kitchen, but you hadn't ordered your cabinets or one of your other vendors falls through and, it could be months before someone can come help you out.
Yeah, I'll tell this story. This is many, many years back, but my lake home, we were doing an addition on the end of the home, and the remodeler, not you guys, who shall remain nameless, took the end of the house off that faces the lake and put a tarp up and then went away and didn't come back for... quite a while.
Yeah.
And the cat was getting out.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. We tried to avoid stories through planning.
My goodness. That's not something anybody wants to go through. I finally got someone else to come in and actually do a good job, and I was all happy with the end result. But, oh, my goodness, what a nightmare. So planning gets rid of that nightmare.
It helps reduce the likelihood of having continued stories. Yep.
Yes, exactly.
So, and, you know, what's the best way to find a professional, you know, somebody that's not going to leave the end of your house off?
So, you know, one resource would be the National Association of the Remodeling Industry. One of the reasons that I am passionate about that association and, you know, joined... 5 years into my career as a remodeler, was that it has a very serious commitment to ethics. And if a consumer files a complaint against their contractor to NARI, if it's a NARI contractor, you know, there's going to be a serious review of what happened. And if that contractor has engaged in unethical behavior, you know, which isn't something that typically is going to be litigated in court.
Yeah.
It's a I would say it's a higher bar in yeah. some respects. And, you know, people are kicked out of the association. And, I mean, so that's important.
Yeah,
so that's part of it.
I would think. Anything to add to that, Tony?
You know, in NARI, too, they provide continued education, and it's a group of folks that are really involved in industry and furthering and continuing, just raising the bar for everyone.
So if if you can look up NARI, I would imagine if you go to the NARI, which is NARI, is the
.org.
.org, and look for members within a particular community or area.
Correct.
That's a good place.
Great place to start. Or they might be able to send referrals if they don't service that area. They might know of someone that's closer to you.
Okay, well, let's talk about do it yourself, which I will not do myself. I wouldn't do it, but what are some projects? Maybe there's something I do. What are some projects homeowners might want to tackle themselves?
You know, a good one to start is, like, let's say trim replacement, because you can start inside, and if you take off your baseboards or trim, you could do it even with hand tools, but a lot of folks will invest in power tools and do that. That's a good way to start and kind of investigate. Of course, you know, do a hazard assessment beforehand, make sure you're not taking off things that might contain lead paint, but I would say that's a pretty low-impact place to start and can make a dramatic impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people, of course, paint their homes. There's some flooring products that, you know, you can install fairly easily.
That's true.
Snap together products. And then, of course, many of us, you know, as a teenager, I was a do-it-yourselfer for my parents and the family home, and that's what ignited my passion for renovating. And it's true that a lot of people, if they're willing to give up all their free time, can accomplish some major projects on their home. And, of course, we often find that many of our clients are folks that have done some remodeling in the past, and they simply do not want to continue to do that. They want to, you know, either they're retired and don't feel like they physically have the stamina, or they just don't want to give up that time, and they have the resources now to hire a professional. But there are many things you can do.
Back to you folks and other professionals in the industry, how do you determine a budget with somebody?
Oh, well, trying to find out the scope and what their goals are, and then talking about generally our past projects, the price range, and go from there. That's usually what we do, and then that might lead to and then visiting with trade professionals to get further analysis of the mechanical system, plumbing, electrical, structural, all those things to develop a more refined budget.
It's always hard, I think, from your point of view. I mean, I could say, oh, okay, what does it cost to put a bathroom in? But can you give a general? I mean, it's going to range from here to here?
So, you know, we were just talking about those awards that Tony and I won, and I sometimes will use that as an example. If you talk about bathrooms for NARI, the categories for bathroom remodels are bathrooms under $40,000, bathrooms from 40 to 70, then from 70 to 100,
okay,
and I believe over 100. I believe those are the categories
I
for that one.
Correct,
they have changed recently, but I mean, so that gives you an idea. And if you look at some of the data that comes out, say the National Association of Realtors have consistently funded a survey of remodeling projects that are typically done, what they cost, and how much value they add to the home if you were to turn around and sell it within a year of having completed it. And in that particular survey, I believe a no-frills bathroom remodel can come in around $25,000, I believe, and then a what they call an upscale remodel is pushing three times that. So that just gives you an example of how great the range is.
Well, it's but it's at least nice to know the you know the kind of range and then what you're going to get within that range, I'm sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
So how do you what about permits? I imagine permitting, I mean, how do you know if you need a permit for the for one thing?
In the city of Madison, we need permits for a lot of things. I think we're supposed to get it if it's above a $500 cost range. Is that right, or is it
or $1,500?
They might have changed it. That's why I couldn't remember.
Right.
And usually they want it if we're moving drywall because their concern is safety here. And you can always call your local permit office to check. They're usually helpful. And as a homeowner, if you're doing your own, you can typically in your own residence do your own plumbing or electrical. But if it's a rental and you own it, then that's a no-go. You can do your own construction. But it's best to check with your municipality in the area. But as a contractor, we have relationships with the permit offices and inspectors, and we try to plan that ahead of time to give them enough time to review the plans and make sure there's if there's any revisions we can take care of before we start.
You know, years back, I was looking at we were looking for a house, and we went to a house that looked really nice. It had been redone. And I said, I asked, well, who did the work? And they said, well, we did that ourselves. And I said, was it permitted? Because it was a major. And they said, well, no, we just did that ourselves. And I didn't buy the
Right.
I took that house off the list.
Sure.
Because there had to be, there was plumbing, there was electrical, there was all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And it was all done by the homeowner.
Yeah, and you're raising a great point there, Larry, because I think, you know, permitting or the codes that we have to follow are primarily driven by safety. You know, what are the things that have to be done to reduce the chances of a tragedy, whether it's a structural failure or an electrical fire or a plumbing leak? These are all things which can obviously lead to significant damage, injury, or death. And the codes are there to protect the homeowner so that they can feel assured that the minimal standards have been upheld to reduce those defects that would otherwise lead to problems.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah, we opened a three. We had, on our current house, we have a three. It's a three-story house. It had been used. The third story had been used a long time back, and we remodeled the whole third story. But there was only one steps down that third story to the second story. We put something. You know, you could get out the window. There was a ladder system that was actually built right into the wall. However, the city said, "Well, there's really only one." So you're going to have to put in a sprinkler system. So we had to put a sprinkler system in the whole house, which was it was costly.
Sure.
But we had the whole house open, so it was a lot less money than would have been the case otherwise. And then the nice news from that was I told my insurance agent, he said, oh, that'll make a big difference on in reducing your, homeowner's insurance.
Right.
Yep.
So lots of little things to talk about, and we'll give you a chance to join in, Sean in Watertown and others. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today, our technical director, Tyler Ditter. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. We are taking a look at home remodeling on the show today with our guest, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build of Madison, and Tony Trapp, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling. Great to have him with us, have them both with us today. And you can join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Sean in Watertown. Sean, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I have a 150-year-old church, and over the years, the original maple floors have started sagging and caving in. I want to replace, I was thinking I would replace that with concrete. There's a crawl space under the 2 feet under the floor, so I was going to remove the whole floor and then just pour concrete on top of the original dirt down in the crawl space. I was wondering what kind of base I would want, what type of concrete, and like 5.5 bag, 6 bag, and then how thick I should have the concrete. And I don't necessarily have to come up to the original level of the floor.
So you've got at least 2 feet there.
I would recommend the dirt to the floor.
I'm sorry?
It's 2 feet exactly from the dirt to the floor.
Okay. All right.
Gotcha. I would maybe consider consulting a structural engineer, and if there's any plumbing or electrical or heating and cooling, also consider incorporating that into the project. Because once you pour the concrete there, if you have to put anything underneath the floor, it's going to be a big change. And that pressure on the walls, depending how they're constructed, if those are stone walls or poured concrete walls, you would want to factor that in as well. I know in some cases, if all those things are satisfied, you could come in and put in gravel and compact in proper lifts, and maybe even consider insulation and a proper vapor barrier underneath. And there's some other systems too that you can also do. So one of your challenges is definitely getting a sturdy floor in there, but you want to consider moisture in your mechanical systems as part of the project as well. So you might want to talk to more people than just the concrete contractor to make sure all your boxes are checked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I lowered the basement floor at our house, and I remember there was gravel, and there was quite a bit of work done before the concrete one, the cement went in.
Yep, that's the last part. So there's lots of ways to get there, but once you pour all that concrete, it's definitely challenging to, or more expensive to change it later.
Yeah, there you go, Sean.
Also an opportunity to put in potentially a drain tile. I'm not sure what the foundation situation is, but, you'd want to have access to being able to do some radon mitigation down the road. And the easiest way to do that is put in a drain tile and a sump, and you'll at least have it to tap into.
To tap into, yeah. Yep. Makes good sense.
Great suggestion.
Sean, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Jill in Mazamani, we go to you now. Hi, Jill.
Hi, Chad. This is Jill Dibdahl calling in.
Hey, Jill. How are you?
I'm well. I often catch you when you're on the show. I love it. Chad and I know each other, and I was just giving I heard about the two national awards, and congratulations. But
thank
I also
you.
Wanted
Thanks.
To give a little... fact check. Dibdahl Design Group has won 3 national awards.
Oh, wow.
Congrats. Well, that's great.
We've won 2 through NARI. One house over 2, interior model over 250, another one was a kitchen or something over 150, and then we've also won a national Sub-Zero contest award. So, and that one was a fish tank, if you can believe that.
Great.
Well, yes, and absolutely, Jill. There have been winners every year. I think all we were saying was this year, the 2 winners from Madison happened to be on the show today. That's all.
Yeah. Jill, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Bonnie in Shorewood, we'll go to you. Hi, Bonnie.
Thank you. I'm calling regarding a 100-year-old stucco house that has never been painted. And I'm getting very mixed messages on painting it and how to paint it and what to use. Do you have some advice on that?
How does the stucco look? Is it in pretty good shape?
It has had a lot of patchwork done, but it's all been well done. It matches the pattern in the stucco that's there. There is some color variation, not a lot. So the stucco's, yeah, in good condition considering.
Okay.
Sure. So the biggest issue that I'm aware of when we're dealing with stucco is that an old stucco house, or any stucco, traditional stucco, is going to be having the potential to take up moisture and then need to expel that moisture. And if you put any sort of a paint coating on that traps the moisture, that's where you're going to see problems. And so generally, we're looking at some sort of a paint coating, perhaps a latex paint that's appropriate for stucco. But it's something that we would be consulting both our stucco specialist and paint specialist for a particular home, because stucco homes are a challenge in Wisconsin because of the extreme temperature changes. And there are things that we have to do in Wisconsin that, or in problems that exist here that, you know, don't exist other places where perhaps stucco is more popular because it's more appropriate for the climate. So,
All right.
That sounds pretty good, Chad. Yeah, it's like, think about painting a sponge. If you paint one side, water absorbs. The paint's not going to stick very well unless it's breathable. So you're exactly right to be concerned about that.
All right, Bonnie, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Give a call with your home remodel question. Carrie emailed, and she needs to replace her decking this year as there is rot in many of the boards. All the boards were tightly fit together. She's considering that decking that is not wood-based as the replacement. What are your thoughts on replacing it with wood or some other source? Tony, start
sure.
with you.
Well, if you're going to replace the decking, it's a great time to evaluate the frame and the connections to the house. A lot of times by the time the decking's degraded, the frame is, you know, near the end of its serviceable life or maybe partway there. So someone evaluating that to make sure that's all appropriate and the fasteners haven't corroded and the connection, the ledger board is safely anchored to the house and that's not unsafe. And then we composite products now there's to look at, and they can be great and lower maintenance. And some people do like wood and let it naturally gray, or really enjoy staining their deck every 2 to 3 years. And that's wonderful if that's their hobby. More power to them. But yeah, a lot of our clients like the different composite ones to cut down on maintenance, and there's lots of products out there. Chad, am I missing? I forget.
The only thing I would add is that whether you are able to salvage the framing, as Tony, you know, suggested, because sometimes we find that the framing under an old deck is treated framing. It's still structurally sound. But whether it's being maintained and repaired or replaced, there's a flashing tape that is often installed, which is particularly important if you're putting synthetic decking materials on there, because that material is likely to last, say, 50 years, and the framing will not last that long if water is getting into it at every screw penetration.
Oh.
And that flashing tape is going to seal to the fasteners where they go through, and that will keep the wood dry and sound for about as long as it can possibly last.
We've been doing that on a lot of our projects too, Chad, the flashing tape, especially when we built up beams to keep the water out between the joints. And
right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was thinking about my own, the deck that I had. I had so many groundhogs and raccoons and everything else getting in underneath it. I got so mad about the whole thing, I took it off and I put a patio. It a patio.
Sure.
I try to talk people out of those really low decks unless they like habitat. Yep.
Right.
Yeah. So there you go. Somebody else wonders what's the timeline for you guys, for example, when could you get start another project? I mean, you've got a number of projects out, I'm assuming.
Sure.
What's your timeline?
So right now for us, if someone signed a contract, we're telling them it's typically 10 to 12 months before we would start. I don't know.
Yeah, and it works out that way for us, but if you add the development time and then the time prior to production. For folks right now that are wrapping up development and having their construction contract presented to them, we're putting those projects on our October calendar. So that's about 6 months out.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone called us today, the planning that's going to take place will push that date back at least 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
So,
Chad's right. Definitely leave time for planning. It's not a 2-week ordeal. It takes time to do it correctly and make sure you get all the details right.
And is it a good idea to say, all right, I've only got a certain amount of money and I've got this project I want to do. Can somebody do that? Is it good to do it in small steps or just do the whole thing one time? I imagine it's cheaper to do the whole thing one time in the long run, but
yeah,
maybe not.
It really depends on the project. I mean, we're always having a conversation about budget, the first time we talk and then every time we get together, because it doesn't do anyone any good to develop a project that someone doesn't have the resources to build, right?
Mm-hmm.
So being upfront with your contractor about what your limitations are, that's very important, because we can't lead you to a solution if we don't know where you'd like to go, and budget is definitely a part of it. And to that end, if we have a client that can't quite afford to do everything that they need to do, but there's a way to cost-effectively start the process of renovation, we have that conversation. Sometimes when you're dealing with a home that has some structural problems or some exterior water problems, the longer you wait, the more expensive it's going to be to fix it. So it does make sense to get started in preparing for the total solution. So,
yeah. That's a great idea.
Makes good sense. What about starting or living in a home while a project, when a remodel
sure.
is going on?
There's some projects that people do it all the time, but it's challenging. Like the kitchen and bathroom is probably the most challenging, because we moved a small factory into your house and we're sending you large bills, and then we took away your kitchen sink and it's going to be gone for a while till the end. So that's what people do it. We can set up temporary kitchens, and there's lots of solutions. Or if they don't have a second bathroom, we can build a temporary bathroom, like in the basement, for instance. There are some projects, like let's say you're adding a second floor on a one-story ranch. That could be just maybe not safe to have someone occupy it, depending on your construction style or how you're going about it. Or if you're doing a whole house remodel, that's going to require someone to move out. Trying to live in a plastic tent in the side of the house is not advisable. It depends on the scope of the project.
Yeah.
Yep. The other thing I would add is that typically your contractor is going to have some way to try to isolate the work area from the living space that's not being renovated. And it's often true, as Tony was alluding to, that you might have to go through the work area after hours. So these are all things that have to be negotiated and planned for, and there's cost involved in all of that, certainly. Sometimes we have the conversation with the client, well, you know, you're going to save this amount of money for your project if you were to be able to move out of your home. And it very rarely happens. I do want to mm-hmm. emphasize that. But occasionally we have had clients decide that it makes sense, because on the one hand, they're going to save a little money, or a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
to move out. But then they're going to have to perhaps pay to be somewhere else. But then the one intangible is the aggravation and disruption of living in a construction zone and being able to extricate yourself from that. So, you know, whatever value that might have, once you plug that into the equation, if you can afford mm-hmm. to move out of your home, for a big renovation, it might be worth it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. We were in a house, and then we were buying this other house and having the remodeling done, but we actually stayed in. We didn't sell the other house until we were
ready
to move into the other place, and yeah. then we sold it. So
it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah,
good plan.
Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build in Madison. Tony Tripp, a Trap. Why do I want to say Trip all the time? Tony Trapp is the owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling. Great to have both of them with us today. And I hope you'll join in. You have a remodel question, something going on in your place that you'd like to do maybe down the road or maybe right now. Easy to get to us. The number to call is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. So what kinds of projects are you guys working on right now? What are the things that you most are hearing from people these days?
Well, still a lot of kitchen and bathroom renovations, porch additions, whether it's a screen porch or, say, a front porch. They're very popular in Madison. The codes were changed about 10 years ago to allow you to extend a front porch, which is not enclosed, an additional 7 feet onto the front of the home beyond the typical setback requirement. And that has led a lot of people to decide, yeah, I'd like to have a front porch. So
same here.
Same way. Yeah, I love my front porch. I spend a lot of time on my front porch.
Oh, it's fun. I mean, if you can hang out and visit people in the neighborhood, walking dogs and the kids out there, it's great.
That's the whole thing. I moved my one of my refrigerators nearer the front door, so that when people stop by, they want a soft drink or a beer or a glass of wine, and sometimes we'll have a half a dozen people sitting on the front porch.
Wow, that's great.
All right.
Stop by. In the summer, yeah. Of course. Terry in DeForest, we'll go to you. Hi, Terry.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm considering remodeling my kitchen. I'm not doing anything like knocking out walls or anything, but new cabinets, new floor, just that kind of thing. It's a 1991 house, just time for to update it. I just don't know where to start. I'd like to get a designer in here to tell me, you know, this would work well here, or let's use this space here. But I'm concerned if I get a designer from a particular contractor, then I'm obligated to use that contractor. How do you get a designer in independently and then be able to put a project out for bid?
Sure. Well, some contractors will offer that as a standalone service, so you can hire them just for design and they could provide some pricing. You're not necessarily obligated to work with them. Some folks, even standalone design services that don't offer install, you might pay for that service as well. Depending how they structure their company, they might refund those services if you buy additional things like cabinets or building through them, or you might just pay for it directly. So I would recommend finding someone you're comfortable with and that it works well. There's a lot of great people in the Dane County area that can do design. And typically they're providing cabinetry and countertops at a minimum and maybe installation as well. NARI is a great place to start, like we mentioned before, to interview folks and go from there.
And I would just add to that, because I agree with everything Tony said, a kitchen remodel, even when you're not removing walls, often you might have to bring up some outlets to code, depending on when your house was built and the nature of your renovation. There are a variety of trades that are going to be involved in the typical full kitchen remodel. And so while there are some contractors that will give you a free bid on that, I know there are a number of us that will not do that because we don't want to give you bad information. Mm-hmm. And there's so many moving parts to a kitchen remodel that many of us have decided we can't give that away because it just, we wouldn't have any time to service the people that really need that information or want it. And what often happens, and this is just a buyer beware, is if you do start out with a free proposal or estimate, it probably is just that, an estimate. And you might find that there are a number of things that are going to happen that you learn about when you're in the middle of the project. But again, this is just all of figuring out how what's the best approach for you as the consumer. And, those of us in the business are trying to do the same thing, provide, professional service and make sure that we're doing right by our customer.
So what does a contract look like these days? I mean, you should have a contract, should you not?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so, as Tony alluded to, for many of us, it starts with a design contract, or we call it a project development agreement. We're making a commitment to a specific amount of money to do the planning for the project, which leads to a fixed price contract to do the renovation. So everything is predictable as far as, you're not going to pay for something until you agree that you're going to pay for it and you sign that document as a consumer. There are many contracts that give an estimate. They might have a bunch of allowances in them. And then once all of those details get finalized, there may be change orders to account for those allowances being turned into a specific amount. And then the client will pay the bill. So it's just there are different ways that contractors work. But we have to say, how long we're going to take. Like state law requires certain things in a contract. Like we have to say when we're going to start. Yeah. And how long it's going to take, and what we're going to charge for it.
Yep, and I think the right to cure notice.
Correct.
3-day right to cancellation, lead safe that we give you the proper documentation about if you have a pre-78 house. There's a series of different things to follow the state rules. There's even a new one in there about that we're not doing insurance work or some notification about that. So if you're starting out in the contracting world, consult with a construction lawyer to make sure you get good advice that everybody can be. It's there for the consumer's contractor's protection, and it's better than just a handshake.
Right.
Yeah. Handshakes are not a good idea.
It really isn't.
Without a contract.
Yeah, you should have a contract to back it up.
Handshake over the contract.
It's good to know and trust your contractor, certainly, but it should all be in writing. Yeah.
Especially when we're booking out a year, it's to remember all those details. I really like to get them down in writing so
absolutely.
We can go back to reference that.
Terry, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Paula in La Crosse, we'll go to you. Hi, Paula.
Hi. Hey, I've got a question. Our home was built in 2012, and it's got on the whole first floor, it's a ranch, except the bedrooms, that engineered hardwood. And I tell you, I'm ready to, just chuck it and put that luxury vinyl plank down. I don't know that much about it, but I tell you, the creaks, with that engineered hardwood. And so my biggest question is, it seems like it's a great product, and would it get rid of the, the creaks and the little, that type of thing?
Sure. Well, a lot of times if the engineered hardwood's making noise, there could be a couple different things going on, and you might want to talk to a flooring specialist to come evaluate your house. I would make sure you look at your moisture levels to see if they're consistent, and also your subfloor. With a lot of the products, even the new LVPs, you have to have your floor, subfloor, the part underneath the finished floor, flat within a certain tolerance. And if it's not flat within a certain tolerance, you might end up with the same problem. So there might be some additional prep work. Maybe your house moved or settled since it was built, and this is a new issue or something of that nature. So there might be something underlying the floor that's contributing to the noise you're hearing or the humidity in the house. That's sort of the more common issues that we've encountered with floating floors or glued down or engineered. They're all subject to the same things you're experiencing, unfortunately.
Yeah. And you're agreeing. I see you nodding.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have anything to add on that one.
Oh, there you go, Paula. Thank you so much for calling. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build and Tony Trapp, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling, our guest today. Join in with your questions, 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, or email to ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Looking at home remodeling today with our two guests, Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling and Repair of Madison, and Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build of Madison and Monona. Great to have both of them with us. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can email us, email address ideas@WPR.org. Bill in Green Bay emailed to ask about the pros and cons of a closed valley versus a valley that is metal flashed. It's a shingled roof with the same sloped roofs, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me think here. What typically the metal valley exposed would have kind of a W or a V in the center, and the thought is if the water's running down, that it doesn't rush under the under shingles and it diverts it. And my understanding that that's maybe not as common now, but it could flush out more debris, if you have leaves and different types of trees around your property. Whereas a closed valley, you don't see the metal. There might be metal underneath it, depending on your roofing contractor. And that's it's a different look. And then typically the roof that has a greater area, they're lapping the other one underneath that, or vice versa, so there's less water to rush underneath there. And I would consult with your roofing contractor to see what system they're going to warranty. Chad, anything you can add to that?
Yeah, I don't think that there is a right answer to this. As you're alluding to, some roofers have a preference. In fact, most of them, in my experience, will, say, well, we do it this way. But I don't necessarily think that one way is significantly better. There are aesthetic differences, as you alluded to, but yeah, I think, the issue is, are things properly installed? And either approach can be done well.
Let's go to Angie in Milwaukee next. Angie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm glad to be on your show. My husband and I own a home that was built in 1930 and has old pipes. Some of them are lead, and the ones in the basement are enclosed in cement, some under the floor, and then up into the plaster of the workrooms and into and under the rec room, and it's a mess. But we are concerned and would like to know if we should be worried about the age of the pipes, that they might burst, and it's complicated by the fact that the pipes are encased where they're close to being encased in cement, in asbestos. And we've heard that no plumber will touch a pipe that has asbestos. Well, that's clear. So it's kind of like a catch-22, and we just kind of like throw up our hands and say, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in knowing what they think.
Sure. It's something that our plumbers deal with in Madison area quite often, and we partner with local abatement contractors. So typically how the process would work, the abatement contractor would come in and let me take a step back. First, the plumber would work with the city to exercise the main shutoff valve at the street curb, because if there's an issue there, you want to make sure you solve that before it becomes an emergency. So they do that, make sure you can shut off the water to the house. The abatement contractor would remove the pipes and then the plumber would replace them. And they don't necessarily have to go back underneath the concrete. They could be rerouted above. One thing to consider, if you're in a historic district or a state historical society listed house, there may be some funds available if you contact them ahead of time to help for structural plumbing and wiring, and projects like that can help maintain the older houses if it's has that list designation.
All right. Makes good sense. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Kathy in Cambridge will give you a chance to join in. Hi, Kathy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. What an interesting show you have on today.
Thank you.
About 10 years ago, my husband and I purchased a ranch, all brick ranch. The gentleman who we bought the house from built it. He was a mason. It's gorgeous. We have a two-car garage, and there's two separate garage doors, two one-car garage doors, and a kind of a brick support in the middle. Is there any way we could change that to one two-car door, or does that support have to be there because of the way the garage was built?
Structural kind of thing. Yeah. Okay, Tony, what do you think?
Sure. I think you'd want to construct a structural designer and your mason. Typically, the brick was supported in that age with a steel lintel, and they have different sizes that can hold up the brick that goes above there. So there's some options where you could either eliminate the brick above where the garage door is below the roof and change to different siding material, but you still have to support the structure above that. And so that might be a combination of a wood header to support the structure or a steel header, and then something to support the brick if you choose to leave the brick and that make sure that's properly supported. So usually, I'm assuming it's not a true all brick, that there's just a brick veneer with wood framing inside. That's more common if it's not that long ago. So you're supporting two different things independently, and that definitely can be done. You just got to make sure you contact the right people mm-hmm. that those don't deflect. And sometimes those headers in the wider opening get pretty substantial for the steel.
Yeah.
And I'll just add, the chances are that when, you know, you might have 8 or 10 foot wide existing single doors now, and when you go to one big door, it's likely to be a 16 foot wide opening. But even if it's larger than that, the odds are pretty good that you will want to bring in one or both sides of the existing single door openings. And if you're doing that, you may want to have a mason involved in restoring, parts of that facade. It's likely to get involved.
Yeah, yeah. Likely. Kathy, does that help?
No, because that's just what my husband said.
I didn't want. I'm not trying to discourage you. I just want you to, you know, have eyes wide open. It's the sort of thing that we do all the time.
It's better to know ahead of time.
Yes, I appreciate that, but I won't tell him he was right.
No, that's fine.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, my goodness. Well, there's one. Kathy lost that one to her husband, that argument. Oh, man. Let's see. A caller from Hayward asked, if you're using tech students in either of your businesses, would that be a good way to get more workers?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We've partnered with our local Madison College. They have a construction and modeling program, and like 3/4 of our workers are graduates from that program.
Same
there. And actually the caller was wondering if that would be a good way to get more workers. Madison College used to be called Madison Area Technical College. Now it's Madison College, and they're doing a pretty good job over there.
They have an outstanding program, and Tony and I both know that, you know, the people that are the instructors over there, are many of them are veterans of the remodeling industry here in the Madison area, you know, people that we knew and respected in the local trade association because they worked with, some of our competitors, and phenomenal people, great program.
And I would encourage folks, if they have, get involved if you can, you know, maybe they have an advisory board, maybe they need a guest instructor, maybe they need donated materials or tools. So reach out to your local and see if you can build a partnership. It can be a win-win.
And just as an aside, you have, it's not only men that are doing this. There are a lot of women in this business now.
Yeah, and I guess we're a little unique right now. We have four women on our team, and a number of them are lead carpenters, and it's been great. And then they're graduates from the Madison College program, so the Madison College Construction Remodeling has been kind of a champion for trying to get non-traditional folks into the trades.
Wonderful news. And I'll tell you what, you're going to have a chance to answer your questions as well from our two guests, Tony Trapp of Tony Trapp Remodeling, Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Chad and Tony. In the meantime, stay with us. We'll be back right after this look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at home remodeling on the show today. What about your home? Does it need some remodeling? We got a couple of experts for you. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way, and my guests are Chad Spade, back with us once again, owner of Chad's Design Build, and with him, also back from last month, I think, Tony Trapp. Tony is owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling. So, questions for them. We've got some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly. The number to call is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Ruth in Chippewa Falls next. Ruth, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a sunroom that the windows do not close tight, and I'd like to replace the windows. However, the sunroom was built on top of a deck, and it is sunk. It's a half bubble off level already, and there are cracks in the wall. I don't know what to do, if I should put the windows in or not.
Mm. I would hold off on putting windows into that deck until you consult a structural professional.
So a structural design person, you're saying?
Yeah, or a structural engineer. Maybe, I mean, even me as a professional remodeling contractor, sometimes in those cases where things have been built outside of code or added with maybe without permits or something is outside of standard, bringing in that professional that can specifically engineer solutions and let you know if you can retrofit and jack that up and raise it properly and the framing and the connections are right. And they might even need further information, like maybe digging a test hole to see what your footings are, if those are appropriate. I would highly recommend doing some further research before you invest more money into that, because sometimes you end up starting over. It might make more sense to start over, but sometimes you can save them. Yep. So
get yourself a structural engineer. How do you still go to NARI for that? Or you can look it up on the National Association of Home Remodelers?
Yeah. Or I'm sure your local remodeler will have a design professional they work with, have a relationship with. There's in the Dane County, there's you were in Chippewa Falls. I don't know any up there, but I would ask your local building folks or even lumberyard, they're going to have some recommendations for you.
Yeah. There's got to be a building inspectors there.
Yeah, sure. That's a great thing, Larry, to talk to your local building inspection office. They're going to be submitting plans. They're going to used to looking at those plans and designs, and they'll be able to make recommendations as well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Ruth, there you go. Good luck. But don't put those windows in until you get that other work looked okay. at. Let's put it that way. Betty in Poplar, we'll go to you. Hi, Betty.
Yes, hello.
What's on your mind today?
I have a large cedar deck. I live in far northern Wisconsin. We have several boards that are cracked or split and should be replaced. And I don't know whether to continue to go with the cedar whether to use the treated wood or to think about going with a total composite deck.
So, you know, a lot's going to depend on the condition of the materials, you know, which boards are salvageable right now, what you like, what you're willing to invest. I mean, these are the sorts of questions that we would be asking to help lead you to the best solution. Because I can tell you that, and just for the sake of our listeners, you may know this already, but, you know, treated decking will be the least expensive decking. And it also will not require quite as much maintenance as the cedar decking, which will cost more. And then there are different grades of treated and cedar decking, which is not an insignificant detail because, you know, the cheapest of both of those materials is not going to hold up as well as slightly better treated or better grade lumber. And then the same is true, frankly, of synthetic decking. You know, there's a good, better, and best. And so the one thing I will say is that once you go to a synthetic product, if something were to get damaged, and that could happen, you know, it is not easy to replace it unless you have some extra material that is left behind. But those are the sorts of things I would be thinking about, and we would be talking to you about.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just exactly what Chad said.
All right. What he said.
What he said.
Okay. Betty, there you go. Some things to think about there. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Ken and Marinette, it's your turn. Hi, Ken.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I got a question on a newer construction. I know it's not a remodeling question, but I built a garage onto a house. And I was just curious. I'm getting different. But so I want to drywall the inside of it. Now, the wall to the house, that needs to be fire rated. Does the ceiling also need to be fire rated?
So it depends on, there's a couple things you can do. You'd want to go all the way either up to the roof deck with the drywall. And what the caller's asking about is they want to have a fire separation between the house and the garage because fires more commonly happen in the garage. And as Chad alluded to earlier, this is a safety concern if they're, you know, to give time for the fire company to get out there to extinguish it to save the house if the garage goes. So the goal would be in our area with our inspectors, they want to have drywall, 5/8 drywall that's very tight, I think tighter than a nickel. And then we put a one coat of tape in drywall mud. It's called fire taping. And we go on that wall all the way up to the roof deck, or as you're alluding to, the ceiling and the wall that's connected to the house. So you could go either way, but if you do go all the way, if you don't do the ceiling, you want to have that 5/8 drywall all the way up to the ceiling, the bottom of the roof deck tight.
There you go, Ken. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Kathy in Marshfield emailed that her 22-year-old house has a concrete floored basement room that can be used as an office or bedroom. It has legal egress windows and a bathroom. They tore out carpeting after their second sump pump failure. She's intrigued by the idea of an epoxy finish. Are these safe to have installed indoors? What other flooring could be used otherwise?
One thing we've done in basements is polished concrete floors. Mm-hmm. So and that's been really durable. It's beautiful. And the flooring professional evaluates, and then they can kind of see and add densifiers, and it can be breathable as well. And you can put an area rug on top. And I don't know, Chad, if you've done that sort of thing.
We have had some clients do that, and it is a great way to go if you have had a history of water issues or floods, and you know right away when you have a leak if you have a system like that. The other thing that I would say is the sump itself, you could also, and I know you didn't ask this question, but I just wanted to put it out there, You know, you might consider putting a backup sump into the sump pit if it's big enough to accommodate that, or possibly a backup battery or something like that. That's a way to address the issue of avoiding those problems. And then one concern, I think Tony alluded to this, is some of those epoxies could have some health concerns. They might be appropriate for an exterior garage, but they might not be the best solution for inside, also because they might bubble if moisture is driving up into it. We had once had a basement that we renovated with some form of an epoxy, and it ended up being quite the maintenance hassle. We learned a lot on that project.
Yeah, the water pressure is an extremely strong thing, and vapor pressure, I mean, could blow the concrete apart if the, you know, so definitely evaluate it. Sounds like you have good advice.
Yeah. Thanks for that email. Nancy in Delafield, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I have a question that I spent a lot of time trying to get the answer for. Is it better to add bedrooms up in my house, or should I go out extending my living room and put a second floor that way? Or use just the basement, you know, excavate for the basement?
Yeah, so Nancy, that is a great question that we actually discuss with many clients that are looking to add a bedroom or bedrooms. And I'm not sure that there is, you know, I mean, there isn't a right answer generally, but it all comes down to why you are looking to add the space and also how much you're looking to invest. So I would say that if it is possible to put a safe and comfortable code-compliant bedroom in the lower level that would have egress and proper lighting and not have moisture issues, it will almost definitely be the most cost-effective way to add additional living space. But that said, there are many homes that have basements that are not good candidates for this option for a variety of reasons. And then the question of whether to go out or up can be a challenging one. Sometimes zoning will make the answer easier for all of us, because you really can't expand onto the side or back of the home. You just don't have enough space for that, perhaps without requesting a variance. But you might be able to go up without needing to ask for a variance, and that might be the best solution for you, keeping in mind that you're going to have to design in a place for a stairway to lead up to that new second floor. You know, for that reason, sometimes it's better to go out if you have enough space. So it's a, you know, it's an interesting question, and it's one, in our case, that, you know, we've helped our clients resolve just going through that design and planning process to figure out what's the best solution for them. So you might consider trying to find a design professional or a design build firm that can help you figure that out.
Yeah. Good luck, Nancy. Thank you so much for calling. Another Nancy from Grafton. Well, let's go there. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Hey, I live in an old, it was an old, old Lutheran schoolhouse years ago, over 100 years by far. And it got moved across the farm fields to the north of the school property and put on a stone foundation. And here it is, this is an old house that this old Catholic family, 14 kids, we got this house, bought it years and years ago. Anyhow, there's a lot of bad things here. I mean, you could, all the floors are wooden, the old wood floors like for years ago. The walls on some of the part of the house is old plaster, and it's cracking, and it's got to be, I don't know what to replace it with or anything. And, you know, an old steel bathtub, holy man, with the coffee, there's so much stuff. How do you go about trying to figure out what the heck should you do with that thing?
Yeah. It sounds like you got a project. It sounds fun. I would start interviewing experienced contractors working on old projects and seeing what your goals are and what they advise and what their team's able to do, because those can you can just start one room at a time, or you can go after the whole project and really help support the remodeling economy, because they can add up. So, you know, it sounds like you have a bit of piece of history there, and you might qualify, depending on the house, for some historical state tax credits that can definitely help with, like we said before, structural issues, wiring, plumbing, and those sorts of things. But you have to apply ahead of time, and that takes planning and someone that's used to working through that process before.
Maybe a design professional. If you're having somebody do that for you, they're certainly up to date on that.
Yep, right. Absolutely. They can help you through that process. And then when you talk to the contractors, there's a plan. Let's say if you want to expand a bathroom to make the doors a little wider, a little more space to maneuver, you have a lot of opportunities to really take that property and keep it there for another 100 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for calling, and good luck with that. Appreciate it. Jeff is looking at replacing his AC. He's wondering about the advantages of a heat pump versus standard AC. And we're seeing a lot more heat pump use.
Sure.
Aren't we, Chad?
Yep, it's a great question, and it's definitely something a lot of us are grappling with right now. So the thing that's a little magical, and it's a great technological innovation, really, heat pumps today have come a long way. They're not the same heat pumps that were introduced back in the 70s and 80s. I mean, the heat pumps today are extremely efficient. They're able to operate at very low temperatures, and they are therefore possibly a great solution for you or others here in the Wisconsin market. And so the great thing there is that heat pump is going to use electricity to and also use either ground temperature or air temperature to much more efficiently produce heat in your home during the winter months. And then that same heat pump will be able to efficiently produce conditioned air and help extract the humidity. I mean, a heat pump is very similar in its technology to air conditioning, but it also takes that technology and uses it to heat. So, you know, it's going to save you more money on the heating side than it is on the AC side. I think it's somewhat a wash on the AC side as far as efficiency goes, but it's going to give you that potential for a much more efficient heating scenario. And of course, we live in a heating climate. So I would say, without knowing enough to give you an answer, that, you know, I am definitely swayed by the logic of converting over to heat pumps in many circumstances. But every home or building is different, and qualified heating contractors will be able to give professional opinions on that. You know, look at it, let you know what your options are, and probably lead you to a good solution.
Yeah. Well, are there ranges in the prices on, you know, putting a heat pump in? I mean, what is it?
I think it would depend on your specific circumstance and what your local installer could do. Also consider that you can get heat pump water heaters now as well, and those are very efficient and could help reduce the humidity in your basement if your water heater happens to be in your basement. So that's another heat pump technology that can save you some money and maybe work out better for you.
Dietrich in Eau Claire will give you a chance. Hi, Dietrich.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Thank you very much. Wonderful show, as always. Gentlemen, I'm curious about finding repurposed material, primarily to revamp a deck and sort of exterior landscape project. And to that end, I would like to find things that are not brand new. And do you have any recommendations?
How do you find repurposed materials, I guess, is Dietrich's question.
In the Eau Claire area. I know in our area we have some places that specialize in reclaiming, and they will resell those products to the public. there was even one company that was taking down old barns and selling the old stones as well for landscaping or other purposes. So mm-hmm. they're out there. It's not huge, but then there's even the Restore, which is a great option too.
Right. And so there, the other place that's really, it's harder to predict, you don't know what you're going to find, but there's some, you know, social media marketplaces where people will advertise that, you know, they have materials that were, you know, an old deck that was deconstructed or something like that. So I think you're going to have to be creative to find this material. And one of the things that makes it tough is that, you know, sometimes materials can be hazardous, you know, could have lead paint or whatever. And so there are a lot of things, for example, that the Restore will not take because it's a liability. And we all have to be concerned about that. But, you know, you're going to have a variety of sources. You might be able to find something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That old decking had higher levels of arsenic in it. So that's something to be very careful of if you're using reclaimed material, and don't burn it because it stays around in the ash. So that needs to be disposed of properly.
Right.
Ooh, lots of things to think about there, Dietrich. Thank you very much for calling. Good luck. Appreciate it. Jeff in Delafield has a couple of heat pumps and wants to know about where to set the temperatures at. Is that right, Jeff?
Yeah, that's correct. So I just purchased two heat pumps, and they're set to cycle between heat pump and gas when it's 35 degrees outside. So I'm just wondering, if it were, say, 30 degrees outside, would I still be more efficient than using gas? Or when you're down to 30 degrees outdoor temperature, do you start to lose efficiency on the heat pump?
So, you know, I believe, and I am not a specialist on heat pumps, but I will say that different equipment is going to have a different threshold for, yeah. you know, where it makes sense to switch over. And there is equipment out there now that can go below zero Fahrenheit and still efficiently produce heat. But the older heat pumps are closer to that 35 degree threshold. And so if you've put in newer equipment, provided you didn't perhaps, you know, put in the least expensive option that you might have been presented, you know, that's going to be really a question, I think, for the installer or the manufacturer, and yeah. I would recommend you contact them.
Jeff, thank you. And on that note, we are out of time. Chad and Tony, it's been a pleasure. Thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Design Build in Madison, and Tony Trapp, owner of Tony Trapp Remodeling. I should mention, full of disclosure, both Chad's Design Build and Tony Trapp Remodeling are two of Wisconsin Public Radio's many business sponsors, and we definitely appreciate that as well. Tomorrow it's Garden Talk. Nationally known gardening expert Melinda Myers is back to talk about getting a jump start on the growing season. That's tomorrow at 11, Saturday morning at 6. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.